are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock, your host. If you are new to the show, let me tell you just a little bit about who I am. And again, thank you to all the old listeners, those of you who've been around, those of you spreading the word, and I'm seeing the numbers grow. So we do have some new people listening to the show. So let me introduce myself. Brian Peacock, your host here. I've been doing this daily for a couple years now on the Locked On Podcast Network. I also host the Locked On NFL show with former NFL scout Matt Williamson. If you want to check out a league-wide podcast, I'm a radio sports and traffic reporter in the Bay Area. Formerly did some analyst work at Pro Football Focus, did some blog posts there, charted a lot of routes for PFF in the Chip Kelly era for the 49ers. Former contributor at RotoWire, doing some fantasy stuff, both baseball and football. Used to work at KNBR as well, mostly behind the scenes producing board op stuff, but I did do a little high school football show for a short time, for those of you who might remember, on the 1050 AM dial. Obviously, KNBR, the 49ers flagship station in San Francisco. So I've been around, said some stuff, wrote some stuff. Now I'm fully immersed in the podcast universe and your host of Locked On 49ers, a daily podcast on the San Francisco 49ers. So let's roll. It's a mailbag episode. It is your show. I've got too many questions to get to, both Twitter and email. If you ever want to get involved or just say hi, hit me on Twitter at BDPeacock. You can email the show, lockedon49ers@gmail.com. Too many to get into. I'm going to dip into it as well and hit some of these with Nick on our weekly wink with Nick Winkler on Thursday's show, but I'll get to as many as possible today. A few notes here before we get started into the mailbag. First, on the injury front, Tevin Coleman has a high ankle sprain officially. Kyle Shanahan said he's pretty sure that Coleman won't be around this week. We'll see week to week. It could be a little bit longer of an absence for Tevin Coleman, but he won't go on IR, so they think he'll be at least ready to go before, you know, the week 8 midseason area. And he said, quote, "We'll ride it out with Coleman." So Tevin Coleman, who was the starting running back week 1, out for a while. I've talked about on the show, I don't think there's a huge drop, or maybe even it'll benefit the 49ers to have more of Breida in there, because I do really love Matt Breida, and I've loved what I've seen from Raheem Mostert too. Dude is explosive. As long as he doesn't put the football on the ground, and I've got no problems having Breida and Raheem Mostert share the load. I think the 49ers will be fine there, but you would like to see no more injuries there, because things will start to get pretty thin. We'll see who Jeffrey Wilson replaces when he jumps up to the 53-man roster from the practice squad, which is a move that I'm sure will be announced here very shortly. And I've taken a little heat. Some fans don't like that they think I'm bad-mouthing Tevin Coleman. It's not that I don't like Tevin Coleman or think he's a bad running back or anything like that. I think he's a fine player and someone who should be in the mix for the 49ers. I just think Matt Breida is better. And I also think that Raheem Mostert's right there. And Mostert is so explosive and so fast. And Breida is so natural. I think that's the key, is he's more of a natural runner. I think there's more big plays on tap with Matt Breida than there will be with Tevin Coleman. Coleman, to me, is just better suited as a backup. He's a number two back, I think, in the NFL, ideally, and we saw his ideal role, I think, with the Falcons in Atlanta when he was with Kyle Shanahan in the past, and that continued on, and you saw when Freeman was out for Atlanta, Coleman jumped in there. Coleman did not have the same success that Freeman had had in that same offense, even when he got the full load when Freeman was out last year. And Breida has also come a long way as a receiver as well. So I don't know if there's a big drop off there at all. I think both guys can be three down backs. But I think it's important to have all those guys at your disposal so you don't get guys hurt by giving them too much of the load. And unfortunately, Tevin Coleman, his first carry of the season, we found out, is when he hurt his ankle. He tried to play on it and they ended up having to pull him. And I really just don't see a drop off at all to Matt Breida and to Raheem Mostert. So the 49ers, I think, will be fine and be in good hands. But they need that injury bug to stop biting the running back position at some point so they can continue to produce there. The running game really just wasn't great overall, and probably Mostert had the best. And I think it was clear on the other side of the ball, and maybe it was that heat. Both teams were doing really well stopping the run on Sunday. And then at the end of the game, we saw a big run. One of them called back from Raheem Mostert that Kyle Shanahan said I think he said something like it was blocked for 5 yards and he got 35 yards. So that's what Mostert can do for you. And all those running backs are super explosive. And the Tampa Bay Bucks, it was the same. 49ers were stopping the Bucks run for a lot of the game. Maybe part of it is that Quan Alexander got ejected and he was out of there. And I think that says a little something about his value. And I think there is definitely a drop off right now from Quan Alexander to the rookie Dre Greenlaw, who jumped in there, especially from a physicality standpoint and a point of attack player at linebacker. But it was Ronald Jones had a breakout for the Bucks, and he had more yards, almost twice as many yards in that game alone as he had all of his rookie season last year. But it was most of that was at the end of the game in the second half. And I think you saw maybe how things started to wear down just from that heat and humidity for both teams, that they were able to run the ball better in the second half than the first. Another note from Shanahan that's a little, it's somewhat disturbing almost, that Kyle Shanahan still doesn't know who his wide receivers are. He said he's, quote, very confident in Dante and just wants to be patient with him after Pettis had a couple of setbacks during training camp. And I guess he's talking about the, was it calf or groin or maybe one of each? But he wasn't limited at all in practice. Dante Pettis was healthy for Sunday and he had taken all the number one reps in camp. He was the number one guy in all the games in the preseason. He was fully healthy, not limited in practice leading up to the game, but still only had two snaps. And I do want to talk about some of the snap counts here before we get to the mailbag. But Shanahan said he didn't intend to get Pettis only two snaps. And he said, quote, that's on me. I know we got the answers in our building, and I know it's taken a while to do that. We don't have to go outside or anything like that. So it's not like the 49ers, or Shanahan saying, it's not like the 49ers need to go trade for somebody to bring in a true starting caliber player. He's got the guys in the building, still just trying to figure out who that is. And I think we already saw who that is. I think Deebo Samuel is going to be one of them. Now the question is, on the other side, is the number two guy, or just the other starter at least, going to be Pettis eating into Marquise Goodwin's snap count now? Or is it just going to be a situation where it's pretty much Deebo and Goodwin and then Pettis now in a backup role? But the even more surprising, I don't think it's that crazy that Deebo Samuel was the starter over Pettis, because I think in a lot of ways he outplayed him in the preseason. And I think that physicality, and just, he manned up there. I think the only play that you really need to look at is that slant route. It was a 3rd and 12, I think it was. He runs the slant. Great throw by Jimmy, by the way, leading him, throwing it to a place where Deebo could continue to catch it and run further. Because if it would have been like on his body more, he would have caught it short of the sticks and maybe gotten tackled before he got across the line to gain and gotten a first down for the 49ers. But he threw it out there a little bit. And this is what separates Deebo from some players, in that physicality. And he's like, that's my ball. That's my first down. He went out, extended his arms, put his body in danger. He's like, I don't care. I'm going to catch this ball. This is my ball. And I'm going to go across the line and get a first down here. And he caught it, ran through the defender, got a first down. It was a big boy play. And I think that's what signifies what Deebo Samuel can be in this offense. And of course, he's so great at running slant routes. And I think he's going to have a lot of run after catch situations. Wasn't highly used or targeted in that game Sunday, but Deebo Samuel's your guy. I think the Z position for him is better too than the X spot that he'd been playing in the preseason. And it's still a little bit surprising that he hadn't taken reps at the spot that he ended up starting week one, which is kind of crazy. But the thing that surprised me the most is probably that Pettis wasn't even the top slot guy in there, and it was Richie James taking all the reps in the slot. And so it only ended up getting two snaps for Dante Pettis. There was a few snaps in there for Kendrick Bourne as well. I just think right now Pettis is going to battle with Goodwin, and Debo's your starting Z receiver. And I don't see any reason why Shanahan should ever pull Deebo from that starting role now. As long as healthy, that's your starter. Rookie week one, game one, play one, it's Deebo Samuel. Okay, I promise we will get to the mailbag here, but a couple of more notes about snap counts coming up. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? Put that knowledge to use. If you're listening to this show, you're obviously a well-informed football fan, whether you're betting on the 49ers, betting on some of the other games around the league. Make yourself a little cash with MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, You'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Some numbers really quick before we get into the 49ers' first victory mailbag of the season. Hopefully the first of many to come. Akella Witherspoon earned the 49ers' highest grade in coverage, 81.7 grade. His passer rating when targeted was 4.9. And obviously Jameis Winston, the 49ers' D, held him to the lowest passer rating in the league. Witherspoon only allowed two catches for 21 yards in that game, multiple pass breakups, and of course the pick six, which probably wasn't even the most impressive thing that he did, even though it was a big play. Nick Bosa was fantastic in his rookie debut. I think if just passing the eyeball test, I'm sure everyone realizes that. But to put some numbers to it, he had six quarterback pressures in 25 pass rushes. That's a 24% pressure rate. Just Nick Bosa was all over the place. He had a really high win percentage, one of the top win percentages in the league for edge guys. So he affects the run. He affects the pass. He's not even at 100%. He would have had three sacks if his ankles were good because he just could not change direction there. When he got to Jameis Winston a couple times, and Winston was able to shake him in the pocket, which was actually kind of surprising and kind of funny at a couple spots. But Nick Bosa, so good with his hands. He was still explosive in a straight line and out of his stance, but he couldn't quite move the way he wants to, I think. And you could tell that he was hampered by that ankle still, but powering through it and still had an awesome rookie debut. Mike Person had the highest grade of any guard. No quarterback pressures allowed. George Kittle, the second highest grade amongst tight ends in the entire league. He was targeted eight times, had a great game, could have been a lot better. Two touchdowns called back for George Kittle. He had a receiving grade of 91.4 and a run blocking grade of 77.7, according to Pro Football Focus. And of course, I talked about a little bit earlier, Jameis Winston. This is from Jeff Deeney of PFF, a frequent guest on the show here. He says, this is what upgrading a pass rush can do for you. Jameis Winston went under pressure Sunday, 4 of 12 passing for 37 yards, 2 interceptions, and a passer rating of 3.1. So the front, as advertised, a huge upgrade for the 49ers, making life so difficult for a mistake-prone quarterback, and hopefully they can make all of the quarterbacks they face this year more mistake-prone. That'll be huge for the 49ers in 2019. Great debut for the entire defense, and especially that pass rush, and players like Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. Looking at the final snap count numbers, some interesting ones. First of all, Weston Richburg, coming off the injury, hadn't taken a snap in the preseason. He got 100% of the 68 offensive snaps for the 49ers. So Weston Richburg back, and probably not playing at 100% level in his first action, but played pretty well, I think, for the 49ers. The 49ers up front did pretty well. Garoppolo did have the one sack, but he was, you know, he was not under duress or anything like that, which is a great sign. And it's funny because usually the 49ers offensive line, this group that has been around since last year, and it was the same starting five again in week one, better run blocking than pass blocking, I would say, at least in week one, it was the other way around. And they kept Garoppolo fairly clean and weren't able to get as much movement in the run game or, you know, spring the running backs as much as they had last year in week one. But an interesting note there, which is a good sign. Healthy and everyone in there and playing a big load of snaps. Almost all of them played 100% of the snaps. A couple of guys, I think Justin School got in there for a few snaps at tackle. And Garland got a few snaps in there as well at guard. Deebo Samuel had 88% of the offensive snaps. He had 60 snaps. Goodwin was the next wide receiver with 74%. He had 50 snaps. Richie James was third with 26 snaps. Then it was Bourne with 17. And again, only two snaps for Dante Pettis, which was the big shocker in that one. Another interesting one, 100% of the snaps by all four starting defensive backs. Jaquiski Tartt at strong safety, Tarvarius Moore at free safety, Witherspoon and Sherman at cornerback all played all 70 snaps on defense, along with Fred Warner at linebacker, who was fantastic. 100% of the snaps from all of them. And that's to be expected. It's the defensive line where there's going to be a lot more of a rotation. And we saw that. Still, DeForest Buckner plays the most snaps, I think, almost of any defensive tackle in the league. And his 53 snaps, which was 76% in that humidity, which is a little surprising, but it's even less than he'd played in past seasons. I mean, he's been a monster out there and just always available and always going on defense, and they're going to try to keep him a little bit fresher this year, and I'm even surprised he played that many snaps, but he's still just a monster and just nonstop motor there. Eric Armstead was next with 47 snaps. D Ford had 41. Bosa had 39, which is a little over half. Then it was DJ Jones at nose tackle was in there for about half the snaps. Ronald Blair had 29 snaps. But the ones that didn't, and I think this is the surprising one, well, Julian Taylor, it's not a surprise that he's at the bottom of the list as far as rotation goes. He only took 6 snaps, which was 9%. But Solomon Thomas only played 12 snaps in that game, 17% of the defensive snaps. Part of it is just because there are so many guys, and he's just behind Buckner, and he's behind Armstead, and at edge, he's behind Ford, and he's behind Bosa. So he's got to work in there as a reserve, and basically Armstead is the guy he's directly behind. If Armstead was the missed time, all of a sudden Solomon Thomas's, and probably Buckner too, but Solomon Thomas's snap count would really jump up to, you know, well over half of the snaps, or maybe even 60% of the snaps if one of those guys were hurt. But right now, Solomon Thomas working in as just a pure reserve player, and I would have thought he would have gotten a little bit more run, try to get him in there and use that explosive ability, his ability to penetrate a little bit more from the inside on passing downs. Okay, it's mailbag time. Let's start with Solomon. Why are a lot of analysts burying Jimmy G already, aka Mike Silver, on The Aftermath? I saw some tweets about the Mike Silver stuff, and I haven't really heard his whole deal about it, but it sounds like he says he's hearing that people in the building love Nick Mullins, basically, and that, which I'm not surprised about, but he makes it sound like Jimmy Garoppolo should be looking over his shoulder, and I don't believe that that's the situation at all. If there was, let's say Jimmy Garoppolo played awful for an extended period of time, and then maybe you think about, okay, maybe you need to go to the backup. But that's true of any quarterback in the league. Maybe there's a couple of quarterbacks that could have an entire awful season and not get replaced. But I fully expect Jimmy Garoppolo to play better and better. We saw it in the second half already in week one after that pick six. Things started to look a lot better, and I'm sure it will continue to do so for Garoppolo. But, you know, liking your backup quarterback and thinking that you're going to replace your starter if he has one bad half of football are two completely different things. And I think one is probably the case. I'm sure the 49ers love Nick Mullins. I mean, he's come out of nowhere to win the backup quarterback job. It's clearly Jimmy Garoppolo's job, and he's clearly the more talented player. So that's that. And unless he's just a complete mess, in which case the 49ers would cut Garoppolo after the season anyway, then you won't see Nick Mullins unless there's some blowouts or Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt. So a lot of nothing, I think, there. And people talking about Mullins being better than Garoppolo or being a starter, I just think it's way off. And even if that were to happen, it would just need something major would need to happen, either injury-wise or Garoppolo to play so bad for so many games in a row that you had no choice but to go to the backup quarterback. To Daniel, when is Trent Taylor projected to return, and what kind of production can we expect right away? Thanks, Brian. Keep up the great work. Thank you for the tweet, Daniel. And the question, I'm not sure exactly when Taylor's going to be back. It sounds like he's going to be out at least till they get home for week three. And if that's the case, you might as well hold him out for the bye week and then week four, maybe put him back into action. That's my guess. I don't know exactly when he will be back, but I would say week four is a good time to pencil Trent Taylor, or week five, I mean, after the week four bye, to pencil Trent Taylor back in there. Just get those, you know, get that extra week. I think the 49ers are fine at wide receiver depth wise. But one thing Trent Taylor does is he's got wiggle, and Jimmy Garoppolo has already shown a rapport with him and loves throwing to him on third downs and, you know, get those third and three conversions, those short, when you go three wide, have him out of the slot. I think you'll see the exact same guy that we saw before with Trent Taylor if he's healthy. And hopefully he is healthy, and he was looking like that guy in camp before he got hurt. And that's the big question. Can he stay healthy? He's a little guy. He's running around in the trees. He's a little bit too tough for his own good. Can he stay healthy and play at that level for a full season? That's what we need to see now. At the same time, I don't think Taylor is indispensable. I think I love what I saw from Richie James in the slot. That's one thing that Trent Taylor doesn't do, is that have that top speed and make big plays like we saw from Richie James in week one and that 39-yard touchdown. He just doesn't have as much juice in the deep passing game. And then Dante Pettis. If the starters on the outside are going to be Deebo Samuel and Marquise Goodwin, get Pettis those slot snaps because I think he can give you a little bit more. He can catch and run. He can get open with those quicks on the short level, and he's got a little bit more deep and a little bit more big play ability than Trent Taylor. So they've got some coverage there. A lot of guys that can play in the slot, and I think that's why you saw them cut Jordan Matthews because Jalen Hurd can be a big slot guy too when he's back. So not indispensable, but Trent Taylor's a good player, and he can get open, and Garoppolo likes throwing to him, and that's probably who we'll see when he comes back, if he is 100%. All right, more mailbag coming. I've hit one question so far. Let's try to go rapid fire in the final segment. This podcast is brought to you in part by Greg's Tax Service. They are an honest, straightforward tax company that has been in the business for 25 years and can help clients with all of their tax problems, unfiled returns, back taxes, IRS collection, payment plans, everything you need. Go to Greg's Tax Service. Find more at gregstaxservice.com. Bump City on Twitter. Are you worried the wide nine will negatively impact the Niners' run defense this year? Helps the pass rush with both Ford and Bosa coming off the edge, but also allows bigger running lanes. Tampa Bay averaged 4.7 yards per carry behind a poor offensive line going against the 49ers' D-line filled with first-rounders. I have to take a pass on this one. I'm not sure because in the preseason, it didn't look like scheme was going to be a hindrance at all. And I think right now the 49ers were, I mentioned earlier how the 49ers were really good in the first half against the run and Ronald Jones kind of got it going toward the end of the game. I don't think it was a problem and it didn't look like it was going to be a problem. We'll see going forward if it turns out to be that way. I thought maybe it was more heat and humidity related possibly in the second half than scheme. So we'll see. And that's definitely something to monitor just in case, because you would think and the 49ers don't have huge linebackers either. They're built for speed more so than power. So we'll see if more guards and offensive linemen are getting to the second level and causing problems in the running game for the 49ers. I don't know if that's what the case was. And I'm going to go back and watch the game and I'll watch it a little bit closer for that. But right now, I think it's an incomplete on the wide nine and its effect on the run game. Couple questions here about Jeff Wilson and the practice squad. Matt says, do you think we should call up Wilson and put Caden Smith on the practice squad? Personally, I'm worried to roll with only two running backs because Breida seems to get nicked up each game, and we also have to rely on Mostert for special teams duties. No, I think you definitely have to call up Wilson. Question is, who do you cut to make room for him? Caden Smith, the fourth tight end, would seem to be the obvious choice there. Most likely, he makes it back to the practice squad, and if he doesn't, you have to weigh the positives and negatives there. If he wasn't good enough to make your roster, then I think you have to make some tough decisions. I don't think Brunskill's the one because you're already light on the offensive line. I think obviously CJ Beathard was one of the other inactives. There's another question in here. Sorry to whoever. I think there's a couple people asking about it that were surprised about the Joshua Dobbs trade. The Steelers traded Joshua Dobbs to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a fifth rounder. I mean, if the 49ers got the same offer for CJ Beathard for a fifth rounder, they had to be jumping all over that, and that would fix that problem as well. But I don't know if teams are actually offering a fifth rounder for CJ Beathard or not, and it's not clear what, if anything, they were offering for Beathard, if there's only offers for Mullins, if there's offers for both in the offseason, but that's still a bit of a head scratcher. So Caden Smith would seem to me to be the obvious player that you would have to cut to make room, unless a couple of the other wide receivers are healthy and ready to go and suit up like Jalen Hurd and Trent Taylor, then in which case I could see Kendrick Bourne being that guy. To Tyler on Twitter, how do you feel about Greenlaw's first game? He looked like he got bailed out by a holding penalty on one of those called back touchdowns. How is he looking in terms of shedding and avoiding blocks? Yeah, I think that's still going to be his problem. Probably will continue to be for the foreseeable future is the point of attack and taking on blocks when offensive linemen get to him. And he was blocked completely out of the screen on one play. I think that might be the play you're talking about. It was at the like a tight end screen or something like that. And maybe that also was some of the reason the 49ers weren't as good stopping the run in the second half with Greenlaw in there instead of Quan Alexander. But a good player. He's got some speed. He's got range. And I think he's just, he's a rookie. So he's got room to improve, taking on blocks and in coverage, even though he's athletic, just, more reps. And I think he can get better technique-wise in coverage and technique-wise because you don't have to be huge to take on blocks. You just have to come correct with it and, that same leg, same shoulder, hit a guy and at least stop him where he is and not give up any leverage inside or outside. But there's plays where he just gets walked out of there. And, we're probably going to see that this year from him. But a good young player, I would definitely rather have Quan in there. So hopefully Kwon is able to stay healthy and not not lose his head and get a little too jacked up at times, but maybe he was in that first game. Let's check in with some emails. And Kyle, he says, "Hey, mate, is it crazy to think that Kyle, Jimmy, and the O were out of sync due to the crazy start from the D and then the blocked punt? You always hear that the first couple of drives are scripted well in advance and I guess would be based on starting around the 25 and not the opponent's 40. No chance for stringing together some rhythm throws and runs. As an Aussie, I was definitely glad for the 6:30 a.m. start rather than the 3 a.m. East Coast games usually are. Cheers, mate, Kyle." So thank you, Kyle, for that email. Cheers back to you. First off, yeah, that's rough, man, watching from the other side of the world, and the time difference is crazy. And I remember when I was on vacation, I'd had my honeymoon in New Zealand, actually, and that was weird seeing a Monday Night Football game on Tuesday. That was just odd, like in the middle of the day. So rough go, and definitely a trooper if you're getting up at 3 or even 6:30 a.m. to watch 49ers football. Kyle Shanahan talked about that's a lot of why Pettis maybe didn't get on the field a lot, because there wasn't a lot of long drives. They had some trouble getting some drives going early in the game and weird field position stuff. So I think all of that does play together. And when you script things out, you script them for a standard start to a game and not odd field position down and distance stuff. So I think that does definitely change some things and maybe got them off to a weirder start than normal. Got a lot of emails and tweets this weekend about fans that didn't really ask a question. They were just like excited. Happy to open the season with a W. So feeling some feel-good vibes right now around the 49ers fan base. Andrew says, "Loved the game on the weekend. Was particularly excited to see the defensive backs have a good game to start the season. Was wondering what you thought about the best week two matchup for John Ross. I actually think DJ Reed might be best suited going with him due to his size and the fact he's so sticky on shifty receivers." Yeah, Andrew, I could see that matchup. I just think the 49ers have to play sound against someone like John Ross, and the way they play the cover three scheme, it's just like, don't let him get behind you. They just played a cover three defense last week in the Seattle Seahawks, and I watched at least one of those touchdowns from John Ross was just terribly misplayed by Tedrick Thompson, the free safety from the Seahawks, who was right there and just misread the ball and jumped way early and short, and the ball just fell right over his extended arms right into the arms of John Ross. So that play should have never happened. And so hopefully Tarvarius Moore, it's going to be a lot on Tarvarius Moore, actually. If I was looking for a player on the 49ers to match up with that speed and athleticism, a healthy Jason Verrett would be that guy. So we'll see if Verrett is near 100%. Maybe that's a matchup the 49ers would like, but I think just scheme sound, and you would hope that both the corners would be able to stay behind him in their zone responsibilities and then have Tarvarius Moore in center field with his speed and range and hopefully reading some balls better than the Seahawks free safety, and that would help against John Ross quite a bit and probably more so than a straight man-on-man matchup. And it looks like we're out of time. That'll do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thank you so much for everybody that got mailbag questions in, and sorry to those that I didn't get to. We'll get to some more on Thursday with Nick Winkler. Tomorrow, a Locked On 49ers, Locked On Bengals crossover previewing the week 2 matchup. Talk to you then.